I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Liberty over security, principle over party, truth over your favorite personality, politician, or law professor. Just a little twist on the intro this morning because, you see, I am constantly bombarded by these federal supremacists, people who believe that the federal government is the supreme power in the universe, that we are all just simply subjects to the federal government. We are subjects as states, we are subjects as people, and we just need to simply shut up and go along with whatever they say. And I usually find out in the very end that these people are brainwashed in their law classes. Most of them have been somehow brainwashed as lawyers or brainwashed by some lawyer or some law class, some constitutional law class, some something or another that has been teaching since the misinterpretation of Marbury versus Madison in 1803 that the Supreme Court is the ultimate ruler of the universe, or in general, the court systems are the ultimate rulers of the universe, and judges are the most enlightened individuals, the most moral, the most independently wise people on the planet, and we should just simply just give in to what they say and submit ourselves to whatever they determine to be lawful and right. The problem with that is that historically speaking, the court systems are always the first to get corrupted. If you are familiar with the history that I teach, the 700 years of history that created our Constitution. Remember, in spite of what you may have been hearing or what your favorite federal supremacist may believe, the Constitution was not invented in 1787, nor was it originally written by anyone in our founders' times. Our Constitution is the product of over 700 years of history. There is absolutely nothing in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights or the Declaration of Independence, for that matter, that is new or novel or invented by anyone of that, can we say that even century? Yes, we can even say that century. Because, you see, the product, our Constitution, is the product of 700 years of battle to limit government and increase the liberty of the people. It's very easy to believe what the progressive school systems believe because it takes no work. You simply consume and like Doritos. The education that they give, it has absolutely no nutritional value, has no value educationally, has no value intellectually. But it's easy to consume, and it tastes good because it makes us feel good. It makes us feel superior. You know, I think what's ironic is that these people, these federal supremacists, most of them believe this because they don't want to believe in what we call American exceptionalism. They want to believe that, America is a failed government, that the Constitution is a fundamentally flawed document, and that sort of thing. But the irony is really that their basis is arrogant. The basis for their opinion is arrogant, that we are smarter than anybody has ever been on the planet. We are more enlightened than anybody has ever been on the planet. And that our framers, being more enlightened than anyone on the planet at their time, invented the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. There's absolutely nothing new in them. All of them traced back 5 documents, 700 years. All of them. All of the principles in our Constitution built on limited government and expanded liberty of the people. So today's show is dedicated to all those federal supremacists out there who believe that we are simply bound by the federal government and specifically the court systems, that we must simply submit to whatever the courts say because they are the ultimate arbiters and the ultimate rulers of the universe, not really realizing that then that makes us subjects to an oligarchy. And that also transforms the very nature of who we are, the very nature of who their favorite president, Abraham Lincoln, said we were. Remember? A government of the people, by the people, for the people. Their definition of people is courts and judges and lawyers. I'm sorry, that in itself is an arrogant position, and it just simply doesn't work. And you know, we have to go, and I love my little lawyer friends, to actually admit that the Constitution is not a living, breathing document. And they have to admit it when you bring it home to them. Because you see, the Constitution is a contract. There is no doubt about that. Our framers called it a contract. Actually, they called it a compact. A compact is a contract between sovereign governments. It is a contract between the sovereign states. Go read the Declaration of Independence. It'll tell you. And we understand that the Constitution was created and ratified by the states through the people. The Declaration of Independence tells us very clearly in the very, very last paragraph where the authority comes from. The Declaration of Independence in the last paragraph says, "We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in general Congress assembled, appealing to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these united colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states." And there you have it, a declaration, a publishing of the sovereign nature of the states. Now remember, the Declaration of Independence did not make us free and independent states. The Lee Resolution, which was ratified 2 days prior, made us free and independent states. Our independence was not the product of a bunch of rogue, rich, white guys who were trying to evade their taxes. Our independence was the product of a constitutionally legislated act based on the constitutions that existed with the British people, their liberty charters, and the Continental Congress ratifying the Lee Resolution on July 2, 1776. This last paragraph of the Declaration of Independence is simply a reiteration, sometimes in verbatim, of the Lee Resolution. Now, the Declaration of Independence declares us and publishes that we are free and independent states. That term free and independent means sovereign. And that our sovereign states were created by the authority of the people. Which is why the Constitution starts, "We the people." In order to form a more perfect union. Right? The union of people? No. The union of the states. Was the Constitution ratified by popular vote? No, it was not. The Constitution was ratified by a Republican government, a government of representatives, people representing the people through the states. The Constitution was ratified by the states. It is a contractual agreement between the states that created the central government. understanding that the Constitution is a contract. And you have your liberal lawyer friends, or even your conservative lawyer friends. We have lots of federal supremacists who call themselves conservatives. And so if your conservative federal supremacist friends try to tell you that the Constitution is not is a living, breathing document, simply explain to them how it is a contract. Our framers called it a compact, which is a contract between sovereign governments. They use contract law language throughout their writings. They call them parties. They call it the compact. They call it an agreement. I mean, it's the whole thing. They use all contract law language. There is no way to legally and realistically, logically deny that the Constitution is a contract. And so when your federal supremacists or your liberal friends call the Constitution a living, breathing document, just explain to them that it's a contract. And then ask them if they would like to take their employment contract and treat it as a living, breathing document. So there's something that you want to know about your contract. Well, it doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter what you negotiated with your employer when you sat down, because it's a living, breathing document. And the only thing that matters now is what your what we all believe it to mean now, not what you and your employer negotiated at the time, not what the parties to the contract negotiated, but what everybody else in the world around you believes it to mean. We'll just take a popular consensus and determine what your employment contract means. We'll treat it as a living, breathing document. You will never find any person who believes that the Constitution is a living, breathing document want their employment contract to be treated in that way, because it's ridiculous. It is ludicrous. The irony is, the Constitution is the only contract in the United States where courts, judges, and lawyers refuse to apply contract law. Why? Because it doesn't suit their agenda. If you apply contract law, then you have to go to the framers of the Constitution to determine what the Constitution means. And then you can't warp and distort their meanings in order to create a federal supremacy. They worked very, very hard to create a Constitution that put the federal government in a limited box and created a limited government reserving all other power to the states and the people.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Now, our federal supremacists like to tell us that what the courts say go, and we must give in to the courts because the courts are wiser and more educated than we are, know more about the Constitution than the men who wrote it. But you cannot understand the Constitution unless you understand those who wrote it, and those who ratified it, and those who determined how the contract was supposed to run. And I love James Madison's quote in the Virginia Assembly Report of 1800, explaining the limitation of the court system, limitation of the judiciary. And he says, and I quote, If the decisions of the judiciary be raised above the authority of the sovereign parties to the Constitution. Now, we're going to pause here for just a second, because this is contract law language. Sovereign parties to the Constitution. A sovereign party is the entity that ratified the contract. Sovereign party is contract law language. It is referring to the states. The states are the sovereign parties who created the Constitution. So we'll start again. If the decisions of the judiciary be raised above the authority of the sovereign parties to the Constitution, dangerous powers not delegated may not only be usurped and executed by other departments, but that the judicial department also may exercise or sanction dangerous powers beyond the grant of the Constitution. Consequently, the ultimate right of the parties to the Constitution, who are the parties to the Constitution? The states. They're the ones who ratified it. They are the parties. Consequently, the ultimate right of the parties to the Constitution, the states, to judge whether the compact, which is the contract, the Constitution, has been dangerously violated, must extend to violations by one delegated authority as well as by another, by the judiciary as well as by the executive or the legislative. The Tenth Amendment tells us that the powers not delegated to the United States. James Madison tells us in Federalist 45, the powers delegated to the federal government are few and defined. Those that remain in the states are numerous and indefinite. You see, what we forget sometimes when we hang out with our federal supremacists too long is that the judiciary is part of the federal government. The judiciary is part of the federal government. It's a third branch of government. And we somehow forget that, and we believe that they have authority to determine the power of the government. How does that make any sense? That the federal government has the power to determine its own power limitations. Madison is simply reminding us here in an explanation in 1800 that guess what? The judiciary is part of the federal government. And the judicial department can exercise or sanction powers beyond those delegated through the Constitution. And when that happens, he says, it is the states who must determine whether there's a violation or not. He's telling you the judicial department can violate the limitations of the Constitution. They are simply delegated power, just like the executive and the legislative. And the judiciary must be ruled over by the states. Now, your federal supremacist is going to definitely give you a quote by James Madison in 1789 that tells you that this quote contradicts what Madison said in 1800. Which is not true, because they only give you half the quote. They don't give you the whole quote. He says, if they, the Bill of Rights, are incorporated into the Constitution, independent tribunals of justice will consider themselves in a peculiar manner the guardians of those rights. They will be an impenetrable bulwark against every assumption of power in the legislative or executive. They, the courts, will be naturally led to resist every encroachment upon the rights expressly stipulated for in the Constitution by the Declaration of Rights. Why would Madison have this confidence in the courts? Because Madison knows that the Constitution is a contract, and contract law would dictate that the courts must return to the framers for explanation. But he also had greater confidence in another body. Come back and find out who it is.
My mom always said I was born for this, and some people wouldn't like that I was different. It never really mattered how hard it would be, 'cause she filled me with love and the strength to live. She said,
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Today's show being dedicated to the education of our favorite federal supremacists. Yes, they are not just liberals. They are within your conservative realms. Our state government here in Florida is absolutely infested with federal supremacists, so much so they don't even understand the reason that we have states. If the Florida state government operated the way they wanted to, The state of Florida would not be a state, it would be a colony of the federal government. Because they're absolutely infested with these federal supremacists who believe that defending the Constitution means submitting to whatever the federal government and the courts say. The father of the Constitution vehemently disagrees with that. The father of the Constitution, James Madison, says that we cannot be trusting the courts, that the states are superior to the courts in matters of constitutional interpretation, and that even though, he says in 1789, the courts are in a unique position to resist the encroachment of the federal government upon the rights expressly stipulated for in the Constitution by the Bill of Rights. He doesn't stop there, because Madison knows his history, and Madison knows that the courts are the first to be corrupted. And so even though he says to the House of Representatives in 1789 that the courts will consider themselves guardians of the rights, that will be an impenetrable bulwark against every assumption of power in the legislative or executive, that they will be naturally led to resist encroachments, he's relying on the courts to apply contract law to the supreme contract of the land. But he also understands that the courts are easily corrupted. And so Madison, in his address of the House of Representatives in 1789, does not stop there. His very next statement is this. Besides the security of the courts, there is a great probability that such a declaration in the federal system, meaning the Bill of Rights, would be enforced because the state legislatures will jealously and closely watch the operations of this government and be able to resist with more effect every assumption of power than any other power on earth can do. Look at that. Your state legislators are superior to the courts and have a greater effect than the courts to resist an unlawful assumption of power. He continues and says, and the greatest opponent to a federal government admit the state legislatures to be the sure guardians of the people's liberty. You see, the courts are not the supreme authority on what is constitutional. The states are. Remember, those states who gave an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. In order to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, they must keep the federal government within its limitations. Although Thomas Jefferson wasn't there when the Constitution was drafted, he is often cited as an authority on limited government authority. As a matter of fact, he did a lot of corresponding with the drafters of the Constitution. He did a lot of corresponding with the representatives when they were debating to ratify. And he gives great clarity on what is actually meant by the terms and the limitations of the federal government in the Constitution. These are explanations as the questions arose later in history. In a letter to Judge Spencer Roan in 1821, he says, "The great object of my fear is the federal judiciary. That body, like gravity, ever acting with noiseless foot and alarming advance, gaining ground step by step and holding what it gains, is engulfing insidiously the special governments into the jaws of that which feeds them." You see, they knew that the court systems were going to be corrupted. They never intended for the federal government to be ruled and reigned by the judiciary, and they never intended for the states to be ruled by the federal government. Jefferson writes in 1821 to Charles Hammond, "It has long, however, been my opinion, and I have never shrunk from its expression, that the germ of dissolution of our federal government is in the constitution of the federal judiciary. An irresponsible body, for impeachment is scarcely a scarecrow, working like gravity by night and by day, gaining a little today and a little tomorrow, and advancing its noiseless step like a thief over a field of jurisdiction until it all shall be usurped from the states and the government of all be consolidated into one. He says, to this I am opposed. Because when all government, domestic and foreign, in little as in great things, shall be drawn into Washington as the center of all power, it will render powerless the checks provided of one government on another, and will become as venal and oppressive as the government from which we separated. We should be just as opposed to that as our framers were. We should be just as opposed to this gravity concentrating power in the federal judiciary as they are. He says, it will be as in Europe, where every man must either pike or gudgeon, hammer or anvil. Our framers knew that when the federal courts became supreme over everything, that there was no more power left in the people. Power was now concentrated not just simply in Washington, D.C., but just into the judiciary. And then we are no longer Republican government, we are oligarchy, we are kingdom. He says to Nathaniel Macon in 1821, our government is now taking so steady a course as to show by what road it will pass to destruction, to wit, by consolidation first, and then corruption, its necessary consequences. The engine of consolidation will be the federal judiciary, the two other branches, the corrupting and corrupted instruments. I fear an explosion in our state legislature, he says. I wish they may restrain themselves to a strong but temperate protestation. He is hoping that the states will protest this federal government seizure of power over the Constitution through the courts and corruption by the legislative and the executive. He is praying that what will happen, because we are now working, he says in 1821, towards a consolidation which will be the destruction of our republic. These things which Jefferson warned in 1821, these things, he said, were contrary to the construction of the federal government by the states, would be its destruction. These things that he warned are the very things that your federal supremacists hold to be true. I'll remind you that when we ratified the Lee Resolution, and we published and declared the Declaration of Independence, we declared that the colonies were no longer colonies, but sovereign states. Do you know what federal supremacy does? Federal supremacy completely undoes. Is that a word? I'll just do it because I can make up words. It's my prerogative. Completely unties that sovereignty and makes us subjects, colonies of the federal government again. And if we are in fact what our federal supremacists believe us to be, just like those in the Florida legislature, then I ask you, why do we even have state governments? Why? Why do we have state governments if their whole purpose is to just simply submit to the federal government's rule and reign? We need to listen to the wisdom of our framers and understand that the federal government is subject to the people and subject to the states. Subject to the states because of the people. And there is a great awakening happening in this country, and I'm so very happy for it. So very pleased to find it to be true. People are beginning to wake up to the massive theft of power, the massive consolidation of authority, not just simply in the federal government, in the judiciary. And the people in the states are beginning to step up. Do you know our federal government corruption that Jefferson was talking about is just right there in front of our faces? They've changed the names of what they do to make it sound better, but it's simply not. You see, they call it budget negotiations. But what is it really? Mitch McConnell says DHS funding is stuck in the Senate, so now it's up to the House to get it done. McConnell says, I think it's clear we can't go forward in the Senate, unless you have all heard something I haven't, and so the next move, obviously, is up to the House. He says, we've had a week to work on it. We've had 3 cloture votes, all of which have not succeeded. It's clear we can't get on the bill. We can't offer amendments to the bill, and I think it'd be pretty safe to say we're stuck because of Democrat obstruction on the Senate side. Well, the problem is they're not stuck. As a matter of fact, if the Senate cannot offer amendments, then the House bill is a done deal, according to Article 1, Section 7. But they can't do that. They can't actually pass a budget that way, because then that would take away the real reason they have these debates.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist. Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
What are the real reason for budget debates? Because if the real reason for budget debates was consistent with Article 1, Section 7, the budget that comes from the House would go to the Senate. If the Senate cannot produce or does not wish to produce any amendments, then the budget is as the House dictates. That's the way Article 1, Section 7 works. It says that the House creates the bill. The Senate may offer amendments. Not must or shall, but may. Which means, legally speaking, if they cannot or choose not to, then there are no amendments to be offered, and the House budget is as it is. But you see, we can't operate constitutionally because the purpose is not to create a budget. The purpose is to obtain something, in this case money, through force or threats. They're holding your sense of security at gunpoint. The House has passed a bill to fund the Department of Homeland Security and block the presidential's unilateral executive action on immigration. That's what Michael Steele, spokesman for John Boehner, says. Now the pressure is on the Senate Democrats, who claim to oppose the president's action but are filibustering to stop it. Until there is some signal from the Senate Democrats that would break their filibuster, there's little point in additional House action. No. According to Article 1, Section 7, the additional House action is you simply declare the budget is. But you see, they're trying to attack your sense of security. Oh, we've got to have this funding for the Department of Homeland Security, so you've got to give in on your amnesty. No, we don't. Executive amnesty is unconstitutional, and it is the right and the duty of the House to defund it. That's what Madison tells us. Madison says that it's the reason we put the power of the purse into the House, so that they could redress the grievances of the people. The people are not happy with executive amnesty. It's an unconstitutional action, and they don't want it, and the redress of that is to defund it. And that's what they're doing. But you see, now they're holding you hostage. The practice of obtaining something, especially money, through force or threats is what we call extortion. They're threatening to not have a budget passed by February 27th, so then the Department of Homeland Security gets no funding. Now, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson has said that if they fail to fund the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security will stop funding our sheriffs and police chiefs. Wow. Isn't that awesome? I think that's the best thing I have heard so far. The Department of Homeland Security stops funding our sheriffs and our police chiefs. That is the biggest step forward that we will have in a long time. I say defund the DHS. They're unconstitutional to begin with. Make the sheriffs and the police chiefs self-sufficient again, no longer dependent upon the federal government, no longer extorted from of their power. You see, this money that they get from the federal government requires a jurisdictional exchange. They have to sign a document that says that the federal government has shared jurisdiction and that the federal government can come in and rule and reign within your counties and your municipalities without the permission of your local governments. They just simply have shared jurisdiction. And the removing of that funding will remove that shared jurisdiction and be the best result for the sovereignty of our governments that we have seen in a very, very long time. Self-sufficiency is the key to ending dependence. So do we just simply give in to the corruption that Jefferson warned us about? Or do we become educated and start calling extortion extortion and stop resisting the criminal activity in the federal government? Remember, tweet out today what you learned. If I taught you something today, let's continue to educate each other. Let's continue to be the light of truth so that we can be a Republican government of free people in sovereign states. It's the only key to maintaining the liberty that belongs to our children. God bless. And see you tomorrow. We came to light.